Welcome back, everyone. You're to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you, your mouth, and the planet. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, and joining us, as usual, is the founder and president of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today? Oh, you sound like me after I go see the dentist.
Oh, I did, man. Yesterday I went to see a dentist. I see him once every 2 years, whether I need it or not. And I guess this time I needed it. You already know the story of my dental adventures, where back 30 years ago now, I had a whole bunch of mercury installed in my teeth as fillings. And one of the side effects of that is gum recession. You know, it's interesting that a dentist will sell you fillings as a means of fixing your teeth and neglect to tell you that it's actually going to wreck your gums.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of common for the medical profession, huh? To we'll give you this drug for this thing. Yeah, it does have a side effect, but, you know, but we have something for the side effect.
Yeah, or we'll deal with the side effect if you get
it. Yeah, if you get it. Well, anyway, so I did get it. I have significant gum recession, which is unfortunate and not very pretty, but it's what it is. Anyway, so what that means is that the gum line recedes and there's a piece of the root of the tooth that's exposed. So that, of course, is a whole lot softer than the enamel on the teeth. So it doesn't last as long, and in my case, it needed some repairs. So I said to the good doctor, I finally have a good doctor. This is a happy dentist who I trust and like. Anyway, he said, well, you know, we're going to have to fill it. And so I said, do we need freezing? And he said, yeah, I don't think you'll do too well through it. So I said, okay, then use it. And anyway, as soon as he injected me with it, I said, this tastes differently than I remember. And he said, oh, yeah, this is a different type of a freezing, you know. They keep changing it. This one is needing to use some sort of a flavoring agent to cover the taste of it because it's pretty bad. So, you know, I said, so is this like Novocaine? And he says, well, it's some kind of a cane, but I don't know which one. But it's okay.
Well, yeah, famous last words, right?
Well, you know, he uses it in his practice. I'm sure it's okay. But what was interesting is, so this was done at about noontime. And at about 4 o'clock, I had such a headache. I mean, it was, I was describing it to my wife as the headache size of Manhattan.
Wow.
You know, I don't get headaches. This was just pounding, and I was miserable and unhappy. And so I thought, well, the only way I know to deal with it is to eat some very contracting foods. So I found a piece of salmon and mixed it up with some carrots and mayonnaise and slammed that. So that helped me a bit. But the other thing I noticed that was quite unusual is that when I went to pee, I had such a burning in the urethra, it was not even funny. I was clear that it had to have been from this poison leaving my body.
Right.
Yeah. So,
So here we come back again to how sensitive our bodies become once we really get clear.
Right. Yeah. Good point. You know, I tried to explain something the other day. I said, well, if you look at a perfectly clean, painted white wall, the entire wall is just perfect as can be, but there's this one hole left after a picture was hung in there. What do you see?
Usually the picture.
Well, what I mean is...
I mean the whole.
The whole. Your eyes immediately drift to that one thing that's different, right? The one thing that's not like everything else. Because that's how our brains are wired. We are wired to notice anything that's out of the pattern, out of the ordinary.
Unusual.
Yeah, anything unusual. So, if the wall was just a hole every 4 or 5 inches, adding another hole to it, it's no big deal, right?
Yeah, you'd probably be ignoring it.
Right. Another bump on an already beat-up truck, you don't even stop to consider it. But the first bump on your beautiful, fresh new car, you're going to be upset about it, right?
That's right. That's what happens all the time. It's like, oh, no, I don't want to scratch, I don't want to scratch. And then, of course, the next thing happens. Oh.
Yeah, another ding. Oh, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
So that's why they say that the first cut is the deepest.
Right.
But anyway, I was thinking about the primitive times, you know, like how we're designed, how our body or how our mind is designed to see the patterns, right? Like when I'm walking through the bush, I notice the flicker of the wings or the rustle of the feet or something like that. You know, like I could be in all kinds of noisy environment, but this one thing that's different will always pop.
Yep, that's the way it works. And I was thinking, too, that, you know, in the old days, we would have had to have been very sensitive because we didn't know right away if that berry on that bush was a poisonous berry or a good berry. And we can assume that a poisonous berry, if you ate one, wouldn't, you know, kill you. But if you ate the whole thing, probably would be pretty devastating. So
right. Yeah, there actually is a method to this, Scott. You know how you're supposed to do this is you first pick the thing and hold it in your fingers. And if it doesn't cause your fingers to tingle or something like that,
yeah,
then you put the whole thing in the mouth and just hold it there still. Right? Well, wait for the saliva to wash through it and see if anything comes from that.
Yeah.
Then you bite it and release something from the inside and wait.
And if it's awful, you spit it out right away.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's a reaction that we have, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Where we've had something and we've had to force ourselves not to automatically spit it out.
Right. Then you sort of bite it twice and still don't swallow. Just hold it in the mouth. Wait for the reaction. And then if that's okay, then you swallow and you can proceed to eat, right? And maybe you would want to eat only a small amount and wait a few hours to see if that thing is or isn't going to cause you a massive problem.
Right.
Like certain mushrooms, you know, certain mushrooms, like you eat half of a mushroom, you're good. You eat five of them and you're done.
Right. And of course, we live in a society where we really have created this wall full of all these nail holes where we just don't notice another nail hole.
Right. Yeah, I believe that, you know, like a toxic person, somebody who's been living the standard American industrial diet is going to have a large amount of poisons in them. You know, like start with MSG, right? It's a neurotoxin. If you eat MSG food, MSG flavored food, you're going to be desensitized from it. You won't even notice that this thing is messing around with your brain and your ability to taste things, and you won't even know that it's there to make you eat more.
Right.
And that's the standard additive that's added to food, so it becomes more addictive, so that you want to eat more of it. Or my most favorite neurotoxin, which is the diet sugar. You know, the aspartame, NutraSweet, other, I don't know what other names it comes with, sweet and low.
Sweet and low, yeah.
Yeah. Sweet and low will lay you. Slay you and lay you. It's supposed to be low in calories, but I tell you, it's low in brain function.
Hmm. Right, right. So there's all these things that we take throughout our day that put holes in the walls, and then there's also the environment that we live in, whether it's electromagnetic radiation from the copper wiring that we have in our houses, or if it's just the air pollution because of trucks and cars going up and down the streets or factories nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't get away from it.
Right. Yeah, I'm just thinking, okay, barefoot in the park, let's take a stroll in this freshly treated lawn so we can absorb some 2,4-D into our bare feet, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Agent Orange up to your knees.
Right.
Oh. Yeah, if it's going to defoliate the plant, what's it going to do in your body?
Yep.
And then people just say, well, okay, so we put these signs up. Do not walk on this lawn. It's been freshly treated with Kylix, which is the 2,4-D, right? And so far, so good. But then it rains, and the rainwater is washed into the sewer, storm sewer. The storm sewer water goes into the creek, and the creek goes into the river, and the river goes into the ocean, and the baby salmon absorbs it, and then the halibut that eats them, or I don't know what eats them, gets that into them, and then finally the tuna gets it, and then finally it comes back to me as this can of tuna that I have in my sandwich, and now I'm eating my 2,4-D that I had sprayed on my lawn, right?
Yeah.
The circle is complete. So I think eventually we all will be so poisoned that we will no longer be able to, I don't know what, reproduce? I think that would be the most common consequence. Have you read the statistics about what's going on with the American couples and how many of them are going infertile or cannot conceive now the ordinary way?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. These days, 10% of the married couples are unable to conceive a child. And one of the things that's going on is this thing called motility, which is essentially the movement that the sperm is exhibiting. You know, like the common ejaculate of a man now is two issues. One is the lower sperm count. Those have been declining with industrial age. But now even the motility is going. So it's like there are fewer of them and they're tired.
Oh.
So the pregnancy rate is going down for because the male side is not working. And then, of course, the female side is also declining because of all the toxicity that's passed from one generation to the next. Because a girl is born with all of her eggs already in her. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, whatever the child gets inherits from the mother. So if the mother's toxic, it's all passed into the girl. So her offspring is going to be challenged. Right. And so, of course, if she has wonderful experiences such as vaccinations with either mercury or formaldehyde or some other lovely substances, or if she's breathing the air that's coming off the power plants that are burning coal, you know, mercury coming on that, or if she's been sucking on lead paint covered toys, or if she's been breathing secondhand smoke of cigarettes that's cadmium for you, or if she's been inhaling some off-gassing volatile organic compounds that come off of the carpet and the paint and the tires and the vinyl in the brand new automobile that somebody just brought. I mean, I'm just spinning here.
Right. I was actually just checking on this, and there's a number of environmental issues that people have, and overexposure to toxins, chemicals, infections can reduce sperm count either by direct effects on testicular function or on the hormone systems. And Some chemicals that affect sperm production in men are oxygen-free radicals, estrogen emulation, pesticidal chemicals like DDT, aldrin, PCBs, dioxins, and furans, plastic softening chemicals,
yes,
hydrocarbons, and then, of course, heavy metals, which we've talked about in previous episodes about a whole bunch of other issues, but like lead, cadmium, arsenic can affect sperm production, and trace amounts of these metals in semen seems to inhibit the function of enzymes contained in the semen, and in particular the membrane that covers the head of the sperm. And then radiation treatments and x-rays affect any rapidly dividing cells, so cells that produce sperm are quite sensitive to radiation, and cells exposed to significant levels of radiation may take up to 2 years to resume normal sperm production. So I go into my dentist, and he says, you know what, Scott, it's been 2 years since we checked, gave you an x-ray of your mouth, so they do this thing around my head, and great, now I've got my 2 year dose of radiation that's going to be affecting the cells creating my sperm, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. So now consider this. The uranium that's been released into the environment in Japan has 20,000-year half-life, meaning that in 20,000 years it will lose half of its effectiveness.
How much are we getting right now?
Well, I mean, it's not significant in the sense that it's not poisoning us immediately, but it's being released into the environment, right?
We keep coming to that 1 plus 1 plus 1 does not equal 3.
No, it equals 1,000, yeah.
And so this could just be one more straw that we've already got the camel laboring, and here's the straw that's just going to finish it off.
Right, so this indeed could mean that my 20-year-old son is going to be not able to conceive without the help of who knows what, right? Or maybe the next generation, his children are not going to be able to reproduce. I mean, this takes me back to the Pottinger cat experiment, where Pottinger was raising cats that were fed only pasteurized milk, nothing else. And by seventh generation, these cats were so damaged that they were no longer able to reproduce.
Oh.
They were so far genetically damaged that they could not have another generation made. Seven generations on.
How many generations since they started pasteurizing milk?
Pasteur, 1880... In general use, 1950s.
Yeah, I was going to say, because my parents all grew up on raw milk.
Yeah, but your and my generation already was unpasteurized.
Yeah.
So let's just call you and me the front line.
Okay.
And a new generation comes in about every 25 years, right?
Yeah, so we're on third generation now.
Or so, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Some people will be fourth.
Maybe. So, anyway, give it another century, and we might be right at the end of humanity. Thank you very much. Well, no, end of humanity in the industrial society. The guys in Africa who don't drink milk at all, or the people in China who eat a diet that's practically devoid of all dairy, they're fine.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, what are you drinking? Milk?
Water. And it has precious prills.
In it, yeah.
Running, it ran over precious prills before it got to...
Yeah, so you have removed most of the toxicity out of that. Good mm-hmm. idea.
Yeah.
So all I can say is, here goes another pitch for zeolite. Because zeolite, in general... is able to attach itself to all of these electropositive pollutants wherever they may be found in your body, and you'll pee it out. So
it has like a chelation-like effect in removing heavy metals,
mm-hmm.
particularly mercury, cadmium, lead, and arsenic.
Yeah, those two. But not just that. Also the organic compounds, herbicides, pesticides, chemical petrochemical, you name it.
Right.
And if you want to, stack the odds further in your favor, you might want to supplement with the Advia Clarity, which is the it's like a mineral supplement that will that will react with stuff that's dissolved in water, and through the process called agglutination, meaning it'll curdle the bad chemicals so that they will fall out of solution and fall to the bottom.
So it's an ionic mineral
solution. Yeah.
Solution, right? So what's an ionic mineral versus a stone?
Good, excellent. You got it. That itself is the explanation. Ionic means that it has been dissolved into its individual atomic components, as opposed to bound in a salt. You know, like a salt being sodium chloride, it's a crystalline substance that is solid, and the only way you can interact with it is when you dissolve it, which you can. You know, when you put it in your mouth, it dissolves in your saliva, and the sodium ion separates from the chloride ion, and it becomes ionic. And the same thing happens to sugar, you know, it dissolves, goes ionic, or same thing happens to, say, calcium citrate, you know, the citric ion separates from the calcium ion. Or, you know, we sell this magnesium chloride, again, that's a salt that will dissolve, so you will have the magnesium ion separated from the chloride ion.
What does this mean for me, though?
They are readily usable.
Okay, so before I wasn't getting these, and the body needs them.
Like let's just say calcium carbonate, CaCO3, is chalk. And chalk is such, if you eat it, it will go through you without any reaction with your body whatsoever. Unless it's reacting with some strong acid, which it may, you know, in your stomach, the hydrochloric acid might react to it, or with it, in which case you could separate the calcium ion, and then the other two ions is water and carbon dioxide. So it can become separated, but if there isn't sufficient spare acid reactive capacity, nothing will happen. It just goes through you.
And this is a big problem that a lot of people have. Like a good friend of mine went and had a live blood test done, and she was told that she was dehydrated, her body was starving, wasn't getting all the nutrients, and she thought that she was eating really well and drinking lots of water and everything else.
Isn't that interesting, just to stop on that? Hydration and irrigation is not the same thing, right? We were talking about it in the past, that the water that's clustered into large blobs energetically is unusable to your cells.
Right.
So you could be drinking lots of water but still be dehydrated because your water is not, your cells are not getting water in small clusters or individual molecules. And then you mentioned that the minerals, right? She was not getting nutrients. Again, probably because the aquaporin channel that allows the water molecules to come in or out of individual cells were not able to transport the nutrients because the water was too big. You know, the blobs were too large. It's sort of like trying to eat entire clusters of grapes instead of the individual grapes.
Yeah, right.
You know, like...
Nobody would even think of doing that.
Well, yeah, but you can pull off that individual grape off of the cluster and pop it in your mouth and you eat that. But if you try to stuff that entire cluster in your mouth, you choke on it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that something similar goes on where the cells need to pluck the individual molecules out of the clusters in order to use them. And it might be energetically impossible. Anyway, so what else was going on with that friend of yours? So there was the water.
Oh, and the thing that really amazed her was, because basically what they did is they take a drop or two of water, put it under a microscope, and they look at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like...
You meant blood, right?
Yes, sorry, blood. And because it's live blood. So it's not like she's testing my friend's body at all, right?
Right. No, just looking at the blood, freshly drawn.
Then she says, "Did you have surgery on your hip?" He's like, "What?"
Yeah.
You know, and did you do this? And have you done that? And right on, all the way from just looking at the blood. And, of course, knowing what to look for and what to look at and all the rest
right.
of that, right?
A skilled practitioner is an absolute, gift from heaven.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. So I'm going to go in the next couple of weeks, make an appointment, see her myself, because it was just so fascinating, the experience that my friend had, right?
Yeah. By the way, sidebar, I had a similar experience with one of the people that's listed as a consultant on our website. This lady, she's a medical, what shall I call him? Intuitive.
Okay.
Anyway, we're on the telephone, and she says, "Okay, let me." I said, "Before I list you, may I test you?" She says, "Of course." I said, "Okay, tell me, how's my health?" And she starts listing it off, You've had a liver problem when you were a child. You have a neck problem currently, and you have a da 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 da. It's like, "Yes, ma'am. Okay, you got it." So she didn't need a drop of blood. She just needed to focus on me.
Right.
I mean, can you believe this?
No, pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah.
It's really amazing what we can do.
Uh-huh.
And we just have to give ourselves the opportunity to be able to do it.
Okay, but I would like to tie it back together. I'm sorry that, I get into these sidebars. So you were saying that she had mineral deficiencies.
Yep. And lots of nutrient deficiencies and digestive problems.
And so the suggestion that was given to her was what?
She came up with, she has a whole bunch of herbs and...
Okay.
Cleansing. Well, basically what she did is she put her on a cleanse.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, before you can absorb, you first need to cleanse.
Sugar and I think there was one other thing she was supposed to cut out of her diet. Dairy, probably.
Yeah, sort of like that wall I was talking about earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before we can consider contemplating the clean wall, we must paint it. We must get rid of all the holes.
That's right. You've got to fill in the holes.
Fill in the holes, yeah.
Fill in the holes, patch it up, then you can start painting it. And I like it to, my favorite is your analogy of, you have to stop digging the hole you're in before you can start getting out of the hole you're in.
Yes.
And that's what she's doing with the cleanse. And also stopping, these are particular food groups that are really not helping you. Cut that out, which gets back to the whole metabolic type.
Exactly.
Because I asked her, but I didn't quite get clear on what her answer was in terms of what metabolic type are you. But she has a book on the four metabolic types or something, and
well,
back, so she's really getting into this because she's realizing she's a certain metabolic type.
Yeah.
And that's going to help her.
Yeah, there is a book out written by Peter DiAdamo, which, Eat for Your Blood Type or the Four...
Yeah, Eat Right for Your Type. That's
right.
The book that she lent me and she wants back.
Right.
The
now, what you need to
understand... diet solution.
Right, but what you need to understand is that most of that is sort of correct, but it is not really 100%. And that the reason for that is this. There is a lot of genetic mixing going on the planet in the last few generations because of travel. So even though it's sort of true for the most part, it's not something you can really live by. You need to actually test it against reality. Like you can't say, I'm a blood type O, and therefore I'm going to have the hunter-gatherer blood, and therefore I'm going to be the one that needs to eat a lot of fats and proteins and give up on grains. That's probably true, but you need to test it to be sure, because it might be incorrect.
Right, because we do have this mixing.
Yes.
Of course, you can also look back on your descendant, your ancestors, I guess, and see if you have a lot of mixing going on, or
no. I'll tell you why. I was just sitting with my daughter having a conversation about ancestors, and she says, "Well, so your dad's family is from Moravia, right?" And I said, "Yes." So he should be blonde and all that. And I said, "Yes, the Slavic should be kind of blonde." And but here's what happened. Between the 1300s and 1700s, there was a Turkish invasion, or Huns invaded, right? So my dad, for instance, was dark-skinned, and he tanned easily, like really dark, and his hair was raven black straight. Just what you would expect from people who live out there in the steppes, Mongolia and north of that.
Right.
You know, Turks. He looked like a Turk. On the other hand, my mother, whose heritage was Jewish, was blue-eyed blonde. The only thing that was left of her, of the Jewishness, was curly hair. Well, in the 1630s, there was a large garrison of Swedish soldiers stationed in Moravia during the 30-year war. So one of her Jewish ancestors had experienced some mixing of genetic pool.
Right, so we don't know who was kind of wandering through the countryside 500 years ago mixing with our great-great-great-great-grandma.
Right, even if great-great-great-great-grandma was married to this Jewish guy, she actually ended up with a Swedish kid.
Right.
For reasons we don't know. Was it a rape or was it a voluntary engagement? We don't know that, right?
Yeah.
But it happened. And that's how, in America, you have all kinds of mixing of African or Native American or Spaniards and who knows what else, where it came from, right?
Yeah.
So, can't rely on anything anymore.
So, Martin, does that mean that somebody who's got all these different mixtures, there's like no eating right for my type?
No, not that, no. What it means is that you need to use that book as a guideline, if you like, but it's even easier to just simply test yourself, If you feel fantastic after eating fruit, then you probably need to eat more fruit. If you feel fantastic after eating steak and salad, then you probably need to eat more of that. Mm. And I would say like 4-1, 80-20.
Right.
It's not that we all should eat only one thing. We all can eat fruit and vegetables and meat and all of that because we are really omnivores. But
the majority
balance
of what you eat, or the balance, has to be a certain way.
That's correct.
So what's balanced for one person could be, having a steak, three times a week, and for another person that's totally out of balance for them.
Well, no, let me say it this way. You typically will eat 21 meals in 7 days.
Okay.
So 15 of them should be from your dominant group, and 6 from whatever you like.
Okay, so that's a good way of putting it. So we just have to figure out what the dominant is.
Right.
And go from there.
Right. So let's just say you're meat and fat dominant. Then you can eat one fruit breakfast, and then lunch and dinner is going to be hunter's diet, right?
Right.
And if you're the other way around, you can eat fruit for breakfast and fresh salad for dinner with carrot juice on top, and then maybe some chicken for dinner.
There you go. Good. So you had mentioned a mineral concoction, the
Adia. Adia.
And the zeolite. So where could someone go to find out more about those?
Well, as always, life-enthusiast.com. You will find zeolites in the products zeolite and the Adia under multi-minerals. And if you get confused, call us. 1-866-543-3388. You can get help, I promise. This is Martin and Scott, for Life Enthusiasts, restoring vitality to you and to the planet.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. See you next time.